some people, you know, who are prepared to argue about the hereafter. And there are debates on the radio and television. They call in very clever men, professors and doctors and the like, as if the answers were not given to ordinary people with no superior education. When the mourner looks at an old photograph, when she feels lonely and heartbroken, what have these atheists to offer? What have they to offer? Oh, a drink. Or perhaps say something and move awkwardly away. These people at mourn don't want argument. They want surety. They want hope. They want comfort. And they can find it nowhere except in Jesus Christ. Why are all these people prepared to argue about it? And I can't argue now because I haven't got time. But I can say this. There was a time in the North Burma jungle when I was seriously ill, and the doctor said I wouldn't recover. The other nine men with me had died, and my grave was opened. The party came along with a burial party. What is that little experience against the fact of death? It's so little. I was with Frank Griffin in his last hours. And I said, Frank, in the mountainous choir we used to sing, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. And it's true, isn't it? And he was almost beyond speech. He nodded. And the call is coming for you soon. And you'll meet your master. As it will come to you. And Frank managed, amen. Put his hand and shoot. These are only small things, but look at the history of the world. Look at the history of the church. There's been nothing like it. Kingdoms have come, empires have risen, they've fallen and decayed, political parties have risen and fallen. The church is the only institution that has lasted for 2,000 years. And all around this world just now, there are people proclaiming this truth. Not me, not Frank Griffin, but thousands upon thousands are worshiping Christ and believe in his presence. And so I too believe in the redemption of the cross of Jesus and his resurrection. Love never fails. It doesn't bear separation. It can be persecuted like the church. It can be kicked down and left for dead. But it rises again. Love always conquered. And I believe in the new covenant between man and God. I believe in the new birth. I believe in the new commandment of love. And I believe in the new song. Oh, I'm first time. Never heard the story of Peter McKenzie. He was an old-fashioned Methodist preacher. And as he was going along the street, a crowd followed him and said, "Hey, Peter, aren't you going to preach to us?" He said, "Yes, but what can I preach about?" They said, "Preach about heaven." And, nothing loath, he began to tell them about the glories of heaven. And then somebody shouted, "Hey, Peter, what do they do up there?" And he said, "Well, I suppose one thing they do, they will sing. And it may be when I get up there after time, the good Lord will say, 'Peter, you can conduct the choir. And when my turn comes, I will give out two hymns. My God and Father, while I stray,' and the angels will say to me, 'Peter, we can't sing that. This is heaven. We don't stray.' So I give out the next hymn. The waves and storms go on my head." And they, "Stop it, Peter, stop it. This is heaven. There's no storms up here." And in astonishment, I will turn to the angels and say, "But what shall we sing? What shall we sing?" And they say, "Sing the new song." And so they come. By the thousands, we are told, tens of thousands and thousands without number, of every nationality and race and creed, from from every continent in Ireland, and they say, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and glory and honor and blessing forever and ever.
When that which drew from out sing for us. We also have Nari Mills here tonight as well. He sings from time to time. And the Smiles that they come along and help us out. The next item on the is the notices. Could I just make a small notice then? I understand that after we finished here, that the ladies have kindly laid on taking whatever, some 100 yards along the road. So we hope it's not raining when you go out. So we've got it. Next matter of service is at Union Mills on the 17th of September. We'll now sing hymn sheet 2, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning, and during this, the stewards will wait on you to go play. Now what we offer unto thee as tokens of
the Apostles, chapter 27, and verse 10. Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. At the end of his life, Saint Paul was sent to Rome to be tried. We have at the end of the Acts of the Apostles an account of the voyage. They set sail from Caesarea, touched at a port in the Lebanon, and then passed north of Cyprus to a small place in Turkey, where they transferred to a merchant ship bound for Italy. They had unfavorable winds and rounded Crete with difficulty. And then Paul spoke the words of our text. Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also our lives. And so it was. They had to lessen the ship's cargo, throwing out some of the tackling as well. So there was hurt and much damage to the lading. But in spite of their best efforts, the ship was driven by gales for 14 days, not directly west, but up and down. There were 276 people aboard, passengers and crew, and when they sounded, they knew they were drifting into land. They had to jettison their valuable cargo of wheat. The forward part of the ship soon got stuck fast and remained unmovable, while the hinder part was smashed by the violence of the waves. They were shipwrecked. So, as Paul had foretold, there was hurt and much damage to the ship. The land that they had been wrecked on was Malta, and in the shipwreck there was hurt and much damage to their lives. They boarded another ship and sailed to Sicily, and then to the toe of Italy, and so to Rome. We may compare Paul's hazardous voyage to Rome with the voyage of our lives. Just as Paul's voyage resulted in damage to the cargo and rigging, the voyage of our life will entail danger for our equipment. What is our equipment for life? We're given a body and a mind, and by the activities of our body and mind, we acquire a little property, perhaps just a few clothes or a couple of books at first, but gradually, as life evolves, we acquire a sizable estate. So long as we retain health of body and mind and the control of our accumulating possessions, all is well. But they are subject to contingencies beyond our sway. Sometimes we lose our health and strength. We can't foresee all events and avoid all accidents. Accidents will happen, and illness may invade our bodies in unexpected ways. What do we do then? We hope for the best. Hope is one of the three great Christian virtues, which are faith, hope, and love. We must have hope. I like the story, which I read once in a newspaper, about a woman aged 99. The poor soul fell downstairs and cut her face. Fortunately, there were no broken bones, but the family sent for the doctor to be on the safe side, and the lady his first words to him were, she was 99, remember. Her first words were, "Doctor, shall I be disfigured for life?" True one may die or prove faithless, the loved one. most grievous aspects of modern life is the number of marriages which break down in divorce. And even though we may blame those who seek it for frivolous or purely selfish reasons, few of us can withhold our sympathy from the little children of dissolved marriages who need security and instead are left feeling lost and unsafe. As with love, so it is with ambition. Ambition is often frustrated and negated by the changes and chances of this mortal life. In our younger days, we may fail important examinations. The door may be closed to the career we had set our hearts on. In interviews, we may be tongue-tied and shy and lose the promotion we feel we have deserved. In later life, we may find it hard to adjust to new colleagues and new fashions. And the only thing we may have to look forward to is retirement with a sad feeling of underachievement. And as with love and ambition, so it is with that other force that carries us through life, reputation. One of the purest treasures a man can have is a blameless reputation. To be known as honest, reliable, genuine, and trustworthy can carry a person through life like a bird on the wing. But justly or unfairly, a reputation may become stained and sullied, and then the voyage of life is cast in shallows and in miseries. What can help us if our carriage through life, love, ambition, and reputation is damaged on the voyage? If we have been at fault and are to blame, then we must make amends and set right what we have put wrong. But if we can honestly say that we are innocent, then we must turn to faith. Faith is one of the three great virtues of the Christian faith. They are faith and hope and charity. With regard to every aspect of our carriage through life, love, ambition, and reputation, the Christian virtue of faith is a sovereign aid. And what is faith? As I see it, the essence of faith is a childlike trust in the love of God as revealed in Jesus. Let me tell you a story. There was once a beloved minister and professor in the Church of Scotland called John Duncan. He taught in New College, Edinburgh, and was said to be such a learned Hebrew scholar that he even said his prayers in Hebrew. To hear his prayers, two students hid one night in the college near his rooms so that they might eavesdrop. All was quiet. Then they heard the old saint shuffling about and they knew he was going to retire to bed. This was the moment they had waited for. They listened intently to hear the old man's prayers in Hebrew. They heard him kneel down by his creaking bed and begin to pray. They heard him say, "Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, look upon the little child. Pity my simplicity. Suffer me to come to thee." That was all. At bedtime, for all his learning and distinctions and honours, John Duncan was a little to his Saviour, who revealed the love of God in which he had perfect trust. Such childlike trust is the vehicle that will carry us safely through life's voyage. And then, just as Paul's voyage to Rome resulted in hurt and much damage, not only to the lading and to the ship, but also to their lives, so our voyage will entail danger for our life itself. Many of our friends in these mariners' services have already faced the ultimate enemy, death. It's 15 years since Captain McBeacon founded the services, and inevitably some of the crew have passed on. Some of us were friends with them from childhood's days and shared their joys and sorrows. They and we were linked together. Now they are gone like fallen leaves. We remember them tonight with pride and thanksgiving as we think of the days that are gone. They've gone and left us lingering behind like the last guests in a banqueting hall. Our feelings can find words in Thomas More's song, "Oft in the stilly night, ere slumber's chain hath bound me, fond memory brings the light of other days around me. The smiles, the tears of boyhood's years, the words of love then spoken, the eyes that shone, now dimmed and gone, cheerful hearts now broken. Thus in the stilly night, ere slumber's chain has bound me, sad memory brings the light of other days around me. When I remember all the friends once linked together, I've seen around me fall like friends in like leaves in wintry weather. I feel like one who treads alone some banquet hall deserted, whose lights are fled, whose garlands dead, and all but he departed. Thus in the stilly night, ere slumber's chain hath bound me, sad memory brings the light of other days around me. This is a thanksgiving service for all our members and friends, past and present, who have so faithfully supported and contributed in the name of the Lord to our mariners' services founded by Captain McBeacon 15 years ago. But it's also a solemn reminder that while many have already passed through death, we still have to face it. When we acknowledge that life itself is imperiled, love is the answer. Love is one of the three great Christian virtues, which are faith and hope and love. When faith and hope have done their work of encouraging us along life's voyage, when we have no other refuge, no escape, it is love. God's love for us and our yearning love for God that will bring us safely into the haven. For us, tossed on a sea of troubles, there will be a few more storms, the wind and the tempest. And then, almighty love will guide us to the heavenly shore, where all is peace, and when we are safe home in port, our shipmates who have gone before us will be there at the waterfront to greet us, and we shall land in the arms of God.
Drawing to a close, I would just like to thank Alistair and his worthy I think is just about the right note. I would also like to thank all those who took part, and above all, I would like to thank all you people for coming along and joining us. Just before we sing the next hymn, I have also been asked to ask you to bring your hymn books with you along for the evening after supper. So now we will sing number 3 on the hymn sheet, Stand Your Time, which will be followed by the benediction by the Reverend Jeff Tolster, and the dismissal hymn will be Isle of Norman. Thank you.